Holly. Welcome to our CMD Bite Size series. In these podcasts, we will be exploring a range of ministry and theological issues. Good morning. Today I'm joined by Ruth Bansevich, Church Engagement Director for the Faraday Institute. Welcome, Ruth, and thank you for joining me today.
Thanks, Rebecca. It's lovely to be here.
Could you begin by telling me just a little bit about the Faraday Institute, why it was set up and the work that it does?
It was set up 20 years ago last month, in January. I joined 20 years ago last month, and it was set up by two scientists in Cambridge who wanted to show that, show their tribe, you know, the scientists, that you don't have to choose between science and faith. And they wanted to help people to have informed conversations and to, you know, do academic research to between science and faith, interdisciplinary research, theologians and scientists working together. And they, you know, they just wanted to help, you know, the world to have a better engagement with science, the church to have a better engagement with science.
Wow, so 20 years ago. And did you have a celebratory event in January or not?
It's actually tonight.
Oh, brilliant. Excellent. Well, I hope that goes really well.
Thank you.
So, have you personally always been interested in science and religion, or have you been on a journey of discovery about how the two fit together and perhaps complement one another?
Yeah, I guess both. So I grew up with parents who were Christians, and they were both doctors. My father was also, as well as being a practicing doctor, he also did medical research. So he had that academic scientific mind. And my mum too, as well. She had not been able to carry on working, but she, and you know, back then it was hard to get part-time work and look after family. So she gave up, but she kept that incredibly inquiring mind and, you know, encouraged us. You know, I think we grew up thinking it was polite to ask questions when someone said something about the way the world works. It's polite to say, why? Or how do you know that? Or what's the evidence? So I have to remember that not everyone was brought up like that. But and there was never any sense there was anything to worry about, that Christians do science. You know, that's just what they do. And yeah, there were things that came up. I know we're going to talk about some of them in the future and in a minute, but it was just looking out at the world, enjoying the world God made, almost respecting his gift by exploring it in a sense and using that knowledge well. And for me, questions came up later on. And so it has been a journey in that sense, but I had a really good solid ground to begin with.
Yeah, and that sounds excellent, actually, that you feel like that you were really equipped as a child to actually ask those questions and not be afraid to kind of look at how things fit together. And I think it's a journey for all of us as well, isn't it? There are always things where we think, oh, we've got this sorted, and then actually something changes and you think, perhaps I haven't got it as sorted as I think. And actually kind of the journeying is part of the importance of that. So,
yeah.
So that's really encouraging to hear. I did a little bit of research asking people what they'd want to ask about, and you're probably unsurprised to hear that there are two main questions, and they are often around the potential incompatibility of religion and science. And I wondered if you might be able to spend a couple of minutes speaking into those and maybe directing people to further resources. Mm-hmm. So the two questions that came up are, how can you reconcile that God created the world alongside our knowledge of evolution? Mm-hmm. And the second question was, how can the Bible be accurate when it describes the earth as being so young, as in sort of thousands of years old, compared to science's estimation that it's over 4 billion years old? Now, I appreciate that those are massive questions to answer in a short podcast, but it would be good to provide some guidance on how people might explore them. So if you're comfortable with kind of speaking into those, that'd be great.
Definitely, yes. And, you know, before I start, I will flag some resources. There's a brilliant dinosaur book our youth and schools team produced. You can find them in the Faraday website in the shop section. And one also called create an evolution, can we choose? And then if you go into the multimedia section, you'll find talks from a guy called John Walton and a whole lot of other people. There's an organization called Biologos, as well as Faraday Institute, that produces great resources. Those are the kinds of places I tend to point people to. Also the Bible Project. And to be perfectly honest, the first kind of response to this question I would give is, let's think about the doctrine of creation, which any church leader is hopefully well equipped to do. These are the things that all Christians believe, and this is where we start from in the Bible. The Bible doesn't say how old the world is. It does have this morning and evening, first day, morning and evening, second day structure to Genesis 1, which we do need to think about. But that aside, there is no statement of the age of the earth, as far as I know. I just realized that this morning as I was looking at your question in advance. I thought, I don't think this is an inference. I think this is an inference from this chapter, this one place. And I think one verse or one part of the Bible theologies one needs to be a bit suspicious of. You need a full biblical story. And I think God's story of interacting with his people is he's always patient. He puts us through a lot more waiting than we would like him to. He doesn't act in the way we would if we chose. So I think it's very interesting where these questions come from and the history of where they come from. Some of it is from the rise of science and people wanting to respond to it as Christians, or from different arguments that have been made and people's responses to them, some from politics and the interaction between church and state in the USA. Seventh-day Adventism was a big influence, the first sort of young earth creationist arguments, as far as I know, that were very widespread and very well publicized, I think, came from there. Though there was someone called, a Bishop Usher? I think he was a bishop who tried to calculate back. So he looked at those 7 days and he took them as 24-hour days. And then he took the generations in Genesis 1 to 11 and he counted the years and people's ages and ages and generations, and he came up with a age of about 6,000 or 7,000 years for the earth. Now that's a very certain type of mind, and we all know people who really want to know very precisely the answer to things. I think that's one way of thinking about it. But I would come back and say, let's be very careful with the text that's written about an event where nobody saw it. It's the only one in the Bible. It's ancient. It's really poetic. There's so many layers of meaning there. Let's see how we can respect the text. And again, any church leader can help you to do called hermeneutics, understanding, the sort of what, where, why, when of the Bible passage and how we should be interpreting it. You don't have to be a scientist to know that and to use those skills. In the end, Christians have different views on how we should interpret the Bible. And I think that's very releasing for people, especially young people studying science. I was talking to actually one of the leaders in our church last night, whose son is beginning to ask questions about things that he's being taught at school. And the parents are not scientists. So he's asking me, what books can we read? What can we do? And he recognized there are different views, which makes it a lot less emotional. And I do realize that some people, one of those particular ways of interpreting the Bible has been very key in their journey to faith. So we need to be gentle about these conversations and respect where people are coming from. But I'm really keen on releasing people to explore and to be able to take the science seriously. I believe the best way, the most respectful way we can interpret God's word is a non time-bound view of Genesis. It's clearly about events that happened in time, but not necessarily 7 24-hour days, especially before the sun was made. It's a bit of a clue there. And people say the same thing about the Big Bang. And I think some of our motivation, I think some of my motivation anyway, has in the past when I've been wrestling through these views has been I really want scientific evidence for God. Incontrovertible, really you know, proof or really strong evidence. I really want to come back up against people who say science has disproved God. But actually, I've realized over time, science doesn't prove things for a start. It does building up evidence, and it always changes. And we need to look at the history and the philosophy of science to see often the response to science has disproved God, I think, is better is why, you know, can you explain your proof? And then to challenge where people are going beyond science and inserting philosophy or worldview. That's rather a long answer. You asked for a couple of minutes. I'll stop and see if you want any more.
No, that's really interesting. And I think actually the lectionary reading yesterday was Nicodemus, and Nicodemus coming and saying, you know, this is the evidence I've got that you are who you say you are, Jesus, but actually I don't quite understand it. And I think some of the things we were exploring at church yesterday was actually, if we do understand absolutely everything, does that put us on a par with being God? Does that limit God to kind of being in a box that we can comprehend? Which I think is quite an interesting concept, because, you know, like you said about God doing things in his own timing and it being always much longer than we anticipate, we can't really comprehend some of those things, can we? Yeah. Some of those timescales.
Yeah. And suffering is a big question, especially when we've watched people with diseases. Life is really tough and God allows things to happen. I wouldn't wish on my worst enemies. In his wisdom, and we know the world is affected by sin. We don't have access to what it was like when there were no humans sinning on the earth. And again, there are different interpretations of what went on there. When we see animals dying, eating each other, you know, humans suffering in the course of evolution, oof, you know, that's hard to really hard to take, but so is 40 years in the wilderness. You know, so is, you know, all the ways God acted. You see right through the Bible the things he allowed to happen. You know, it's not clear cut. It's not the way we would have done it, absolutely not. But looking at human history and what's happening in the world now, it's a good job we've got God in control, not us.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, when you were talking about your colleagues or your friend's son having those questions, one of the things I found really useful is not trying to know all the answers with my children, because sometimes that's where you kind of get into trouble, because you're trying to explain those things. And we have used the Andrew Ollerton and Bear Grylls Bible, which sort of you read through and it comes in with little random facts about things like how to survive a flood and things like that. And actually just sharing that with my older two and just having conversations about, well, what do you think about that? I know we had a really good conversation around the stars, the idea of, you know, Abraham's line being more numerous than the stars in the sky. And then there's a little fact in the Bible that says scientists now believe that for every grain of sand there are 10,000 stars, and that just kind of blew our mind. Like, for we talked about it for ages, like, how can you possibly comprehend that many stars?
And I would point to a book called 101 Great Big Questions about God and science, which our youth and schools team produced. And I think, as you say, it's not about having the answers, but leaving that book in the loo, as I advised our church leader last night. I said, just leave it in the loo and the whole family can dip into it. It's the best training for any adult. When I sell it to adults, again, it's produced by our youth and schools team, I think for about 10 to 12 year olds. But to be perfectly honest, I sell it to people and I say, you read it and then give it to a young person, and sort of 200 word answers to the most incredible questions that young people ask. And some of those answers are, we don't know. We don't know. We don't have the mind of God. We are limited. We're bound by time. Our minds can't take everything in. We can understand a lot, but not everything. And I think apologetics is absolutely brilliant. It's a really great way to try to tackle and take seriously the questions about God and the Bible. But we can't take it too far. Do you know what I mean? It's not a game. It's not about winning arguments. It's about not about knowing everything. It's about making our best attempt. But then for me, I would say also recognizing that God, as a theologian, Alistair McGrath, I think would say, is beyond, you have to go beyond rational. You do the rational and then you have to go beyond that into the unknown. Or it was a physicist priest, I think a Jesuit, I've forgotten his name just now, talking about how being dazzled by the light of intelligibility. There's so much in the world to understand, that this incredible ordered world that God has made, ordered, but where chaos also and randomness also has a very strong role in bringing life into being and keeping life alive. We can't take it all in. And big quotes by people like Einstein, you know, they say these brilliant things about God doesn't play dice, or, you know, whatever, they've reached the edge of the unknown and seen that dazzling light of intelligibility, and they start using big spiritual words.
Mm. And that kind of brings me on actually to the next question, which is around reconciling scientific knowledge with religious belief. And I just wonder whether that's something that you particularly find applies to Christian inquirers, sort of those exploring whether they have a faith. Is it something that people really feel that they need to explore now, or is it something that's a bit more widespread than that?
I think everyone needs to have their way of doing it, whether it's people engaging with God on a level that it's not important, or whether, you know, they just trust that God, you know, do the thought experiment. If God made the world, what have I got to worry about? Things we discover. I want to know God. Yes, science is brilliant. But those conflicts are going to be because I've interpreted the science or the Bible wrong. Some people will just go at it with a completely different mindset, whereas a lot of people, particularly in Western society, I think, are asking questions about detailed things. And part of it, I think, is about setting people free. I remember my friend Han, who came to Cambridge to study, super bright guy, engineer, as far as I can remember. And he's gone back to Malaysia now, but he, when he was encountering Jesus, science was full of questions for him. He came to see a video that documentary we'd made. We showed it as part of a science festival in Cambridge. And that removed the barriers for him. You know, he was like, oh, they're a smart scientist or Christians. Yeah, they've got different opinions, but they don't think there's a barrier. And that set him free to explore Jesus. Other people have more detailed things to work through. But then, as you said, you know, stuff comes up, your kids ask questions, you have doubts, scientists do new things. You know, I think the Faraday Institute, what we want to be there is be there to help people to be confident about their faith, to point out the myths and misunderstandings and provide resources to dig through the big, deep questions that people have.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. That's really helpful. And I was also wondering about whether there's been a bit of a changing trend within people over the last, I don't know, maybe 20 years, perhaps. Just thinking about whether science and religion are mutually exclusive. For me, kind of growing up in the 90s, there was almost an incredulity that anybody would believe in God when there was so much science, and there was lots of stuff kind of sort of beating people like, why would you believe this? But now it feels, and it might just be that I'm getting older and perhaps things are changing for me, but it feels like there's a greater openness to faith now. Is that something that you have you seen a changing trend in that or not?
Yeah, I mean, I think a bit. I mean, you still ask me, you know, those two questions that came up when you ask people, what are the big questions? They're still the same questions, in the sense that we were answering 20 years ago. But 20 years ago, when Faraday Institute started, The God Delusion by Richard Dawkins came out, and we did a lot of responding to that. But I feel like now people are reaching for other things. We've seen that science will not save the world. Science will enable us to produce technology that can save lives, or people can beat the blazes out of each other using it, you know, in very big ways, and everyone, you know, affecting huge numbers of other people. We can see the ambiguity there. Science will not, it, it's an is, not an ought. You know, it's this thing. We know how things work. We can use it. It doesn't tell us how we should use it.
Yeah.
And I do feel that people are much more spiritually open, searching for other things, wanting meaning and purpose. It's not as stupid, I feel, anymore to believe in God or to have a story that's spiritual. And I think young people, especially, it seems, or young adults as well, you know, it's not, yeah, as you and I, you know, in school, as I was a Christian, would be feeling a bit stupid. Whereas today, I don't think that's quite the case. I mean, yes, there are controversies and difficult things and reasons why people might feel weird as a Christian. It's always countercultural, but I think people are asking more questions. You know, we're doing courses on, you know, psychology and pastoral care, where we've shifted our focus in the church's work towards thinking, how do we include science in church life, or engagement with science in church life, and encourage ourselves, equip ourselves to use the benefits from science in church life, and our knowledge about science in church life, to fuel our worship, for example, with incredible pictures of the stars, all those amazing kinds of facts you shared, and that moment of awe with your child, that's amazing. Thinking about, you know, how do we draw on psychology and pastoral care? How do we draw on, you know, knowledge of neurodivergence in helping everyone in the church to engage with God, for example? I think, yeah, those questions are still there, but they're further. It's more of a niche now than absolute full-on mainstream, it feels.
Yeah, and it's encouraging to hear, I think, and actually feels much more inclusive as well, and makes the church much more open to actually being able to engage in those conversations.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, the apologetics, I think particularly in schools, when young people are coming up against the world, they're asking their own questions, young adults asking big questions, I think, and they will be there at different life stages, or when we're confronted by a really rough old time in life, or, you know, new things, or you have a child, you know, we'll have new questions. But yeah, I think, yeah, as you say, probably the majority of people throughout their lives, it's that spirituality, that worship, that connection with God.
Okay, so you've said already that the Faraday Institute works to support churches and church leaders, providing with deeper reflections and resources. How do churches get involved with this if they're not already aware of who you are or what you're doing?
Well, yeah, I mean, the best way is to come and get to know us. If you can make it through to Cambridge, or if we're having an event in your area, on the Faraday Institute website, there's an event section and there's a churches events section, and you can see what's happening. There might be something in your area, or you might want to invite a speaker down to your area. Get to know us in person. We've got a couple of courses coming up. We've got one on, as I said, including science in church life, benefiting from science in church life. As I say, things like prayer, worship, preaching, that will start in September. It's an evening online course, so hopefully accessible to everyone, with an asynchronous way of attending as well, if particular evenings are tricky for you. We've got a day course on the churches, helping people through trauma, responding to trauma. That's in November, so look out for details of that on the website. And again, there's an online and an in-person option for that. So those are specific ones. We have a summer course as well, if you want an in-depth dose of science and faith in July. But yeah, other than that, you can sign up for our newsletter on the bottom right-hand corner of every single page of the Faraday Institute website, or just go to faraday.institute/churches. And you'll see a way on there to sign up. Actually, you can sign up for newsletter. You can sign up on WhatsApp, get a message every week about something that's going on. We have LinkedIn and Facebook as well. And you can just email or give us a call if you're a church leader and you just want some advice on resources for your particular situation, or you'd like to invite a speaker, you've got some ideas. We also have a wonderful youth and schools team who will come into your area and do things in the schools and in your churches and training up teachers and church and youth workers or kids workers. So there are lots of ways to connect. And my overriding feeling at the moment is that church leaders are very stretched. We realise that you have a lot to do, and there's a lot of activities you already have to do. So we try to fit things in to provide off the shelf, free if possible, resources to slot things into things you already have to do to make your life easier and not give you extra things to do. So that's the aim.
Excellent. I'm sure that appeals to lots of people. And we'll make sure that we include a link to your website underneath the podcast as well. So thanks for sharing that. Is there any kind of final message you want to leave listeners with today?
Yeah, I think somehow we've ended up with, it's very probably human nature. Some people feel like they're not sciencey and this conversation isn't for them. Somehow they've lost confidence in themselves, or they've written themselves off. And, or maybe the whole church, we're not scientists here. And what I would say is no, and that's fine. I mean, there probably are people in your church who are or have been in careers where they did use scientific knowledge, healthcare, maybe agriculture. Anyone who grows anything, looks after their own body or a loved ones, has cooking, is using scientific knowledge all the time. And I think we all have a voice, we all have concerns, worries, or things we can contribute. And those are the people that Faraday Churches, the Churches Programme of the Faraday Institute, wants to serve primarily. If you are already a scientist, by all means, yes, serve your church by getting some of our resources and helping them to think things through. But also check out Christians in Science if you are a sciencey person and you want to be supported in your journey as a scientist, as a working scientist. And we work very closely with Christians in Science together, trying to cover the range of people's needs. So do check both those organisations out and don't write yourself off. And don't be worried that we're going to do something that's too academic or not suitable for your church.
Lovely. Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Ruth. It's been a real pleasure to speak to you. I'm really looking forward to going to check out some of those resources myself as well. So thank you for that.
Thanks, Rebecca.
You've been listening to CMD Bite Size Podcasts, produced by the Diocese of Truro. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do follow and share. To listen to similar podcasts, please visit the Truro Diocese website. If there is a subject you would like us to include, please email us at ministry@truro-diocese.org.uk.